The Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society Podcast.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
We love mysterious old-time radio stories, but do they stand the test of time? That's what we're here to find out.
Today, we present an episode of my choosing, The Search for Life, from The Hermit's Cave.
Longtime listeners to the podcast will know the hermit with his chronic cackle and pack of poorly behaved dogs is one of our favorite horror hosts. The character was created by a group of actors known as the Mummers for a series of dramatic sketches performed in the early 1930s on WJR in Detroit. By the mid-1930s, the Mummers began calling themselves the Mummers Little Theater of the Air, and quickly became known for their weird and disturbing tales.
In 1936, the Mummers began focusing entirely on supernatural stories with a show they called In the Hermit's Cave. The following year, the Mummers gained the sponsorship of Olga Cole and shortened the show's name to The Hermit's Cave.
According to the website Digital Deli, the show ran for 10 years, producing over 500 episodes. There was also a brief run on the Mutual Network from 1938 to 1939, retitled The Devil's Scrapbook, and a much longer run on KMPC in Los Angeles from 1940 to 1944. Despite the show's prolific output, only a small number of episodes are in circulation today.
And now, let's listen to The Search for Life from The Hermit's Cave, first aired sometime in 1940.
It's late at night, and a chill has set in. You're alone, and the only light you see is coming from an antique radio. Listen to the sounds coming from the speaker, listen to the music, and listen to the voices.
The Mummers, in the Little Theater of the Air.
Now, the hermit is ready to begin.
Ghost stories, weird stories, and murders too. The hermit knows of them all. Turn out your light. Turn them out. Ah. Have you heard the story, The Search for Life? Eh? Then listen while the hermit tells you the story.
Yes?
Yeah? Hale, don't you think it's time you stopped for a while? It's getting awfully late.
Just a moment. I didn't notice what time it was, Vera.
Come on, I have a nice warm supper ready for you.
Well, I'll lock the laboratory door and be right with you.
I wish you wouldn't work so hard, Hale.
You mustn't worry about me. A research scientist has to work hard.
I've barely seen you these past few weeks. You've never worked this hard before.
And I've never done anything like this before. Here, let me seat you.
Thank you. What are you doing, Hale?
Vera, have you been in my laboratory?
I only went in the other day to clean up.
I didn't notice that you had cleaned up. Same to me.
You came back before I had a chance to do any cleaning.
But being somewhat of a chemist yourself, you studied my notes, eh?
Well, they were there on the desk. I couldn't help but read them. Hale, you must stop it. Stop this experiment immediately.
What I'm doing is nothing more than other men have done before me. The creation of the elements the body needs to live on and on. Yes, possibly the chemical inoperative procedure for the recreation of a dead person.
Recreate a dead person? Well, that's impossible.
Why is it? Why is anything impossible if you know the cause and effect and the properties that make it up?
Hale, drop it, please. Don't go ahead with this thing. If you succeed, you'll control a thing that was never meant to be controlled.
Yes, I shall control death.
And the world will bow to you, flock to you at first, and then they'll grow to hate you and despise you for what you've done. They'll seek you out and kill you, Because if death was not to be, someone else would have changed it aeons ago. Hale, you must stop this experiment before you get too deep.
Coming. Why, Court Mander.
Hello, Nada. I came as soon as I received your message from Mr. Browson.
Come in. Oh, I'm glad to see you, Court. You know, I've tried for almost a week to get in touch with you. In here.
I've tried equally hard to make contact with you. You're a celebrity now.
Oh, you don't do so badly in that laboratory yourself. Won't you sit down?
No, thanks. I can only stay a few minutes. Hale Browson is rather exacting since he's perfected his experiment.
Oh, let's not talk about him. I seem to be afraid of his very name. Bringing dead people back to life. Doing miracles.
I'm his assistant. You're not afraid of me?
Someone I've known all my life, grew up with? Oh, don't be silly. Of course I'm not afraid of you.
Well, Nada Arling, the actress. I never believed it'd be like this.
You doubted my sincerity? Or my ability?
No, I never doubted either. But that night 6 years ago when you went away, why... Well, that's the way I've always pictured you.
I've never forgotten that night, Court.
Nor I.
I wish we could have had this meeting when I first arrived.
Then you're leaving?
I must, Court.
But why? Is it always going to be like this?
I said 6 years ago, if I ever married, it would be you. But I can't turn back now. I have contracts.
Doesn't the fact that something inside both of us is slipping away mean anything to you?
Our youth is slipping away, and that's the only thing I have.
Our relative proportions and understandings are what I meant.
That's not true. Because I'm Nada Arling and your assistant to Hale Browson, the new creator, even that can't change
it. I don't like my position, Nada.
That of waiting for me or as a research scientist?
Both, but I'm afraid of the latter.
I'm surprised. Mr. Browson's discovery has made him the most important person in the world. And you're basking in every glory that's his.
That may mean a great deal to you. But to me, it's something horrible. I only accepted the position as Browson's assistant for one reason.
You accepted him? It was the other way around.
No. He told me what to expect. But I was willing to chance it then. Now I know I was wrong. Already it has begun to show itself. We're going to work the other way.
The other way? To work against creation?
Yes. Hale Browson gave his discovery to the world, thinking its greatness would overshadow any evils it might give rise to. And instead, its evils have overshadowed its greatness and has gone beyond control.
Oh, God, what you contemplate is murder.
There's no alternative, Nada.
Oh, what of the good you've done?
Good? You haven't seen some of those old people we treat continually. We give them life when their souls cry out to die. That's what we're doing. And everyone calls it good.
You've changed, Court. I didn't know.
I'm sorry, Nada. I shouldn't have come here. You know how I feel about you. I'm entering another world. And you are the only thing that remains between me and... Well, I can stop now. Leave Browson. You and I could go where no one knows us.
Oh, that'd be running away, Court. Something that never solved anything. I know what to expect as I am now. I'm realizing an ambition. And I can't give it all up in a moment.
No. I guess you couldn't. I should have known. Where does your tour take you?
My boat leaves for South America at 6 tomorrow morning. Court.
Yes, Nana?
I want you to promise me something.
All right.
That you'll forget Hale Browson and what you plan to do. Will you promise?
All right. Yes, I promise.
I hope you mean that.
Oh, I do. I do mean it. Are you going to board your boat tomorrow morning?
No, later this evening. They're giving me a reception, and when I leave there, I'm going directly to the boat.
I see.
Leaving so soon?
Yes, I have to be getting back.
Are you going to tell Mr. Browson tonight?
Tonight? Why, that's what I'm going to do now. I'll probably see you at the boat later.
Well, why such an abrupt departure? I wanted to... Strangely, yet. Oh, very strange.
Good evening, Mr. Browson.
Court. What on earth brings you here at this hour of the night? I wasn't expecting you until morning.
I had to talk to you.
Come on in. Must be rather important to bring you away from Miss Arling... Sit down.
Thank you.
You seem quite upset about something.
I am.
What's on your mind, Court?
Do you mind if we close that door?
I certainly not. I'll close it. There. Now, what's troubling you?
Hale, have you told Mrs. Browson what we intend doing?
No, I haven't. Naturally, I haven't told anyone.
Good. Hale, before we start allowing them to die when they should, I'm going to kill Nada Arling and bring her back to life.
But why? Why should you want to kill her? You're going to marry the girl.
That's what I had hoped. But it's all changed now.
And why have you come to me? You know almost as much about the procedures
as
I.
Yes, that's true. But I don't know what chemicals not to use in order that her brain will remember only to a certain point and not beyond.
She won't marry you?
No. Her career is more important to her than I am.
You know this is murder.
But I'll bring her back to life.
And in so doing, you intend creating her mind so it will forget its former fame?
That's what I came to see you about.
Hmm.
So far, our creations have been with everything but the mind. That we've been unable to change. When we brought people back to life, their memory patterns remained the same. Now, I know you've been carrying on further research along this line.
Court, I have. My first experiment was tonight.
What was the result?
Just a moment and I'll show you. Come with me to my laboratory.
Who was it?
Oh, a derelict who had died. Now, just a moment before you enter. The experiment wasn't entirely successful. I brought the subject to life easily enough, but his brain... Well, you shall see.
What was that?
Wait until I snap on the light.
Well, in a cage. Looks all right. Doesn't seem to be anything wrong with him.
Don't go too near that cage. He may look all right, Court, but I assure you he isn't. Look at his eyes.
Yes, they have a wild, starry cast to them.
And his gibberish. What does that sound like to you?
It's almost like an animal.
Yes.
He wasn't insane before he died.
No, he died of a heart attack.
Well, then how did he become like this?
I reconstructed his brain exactly as it was. But the brain must manufacture something of its own that I don't know about. The only way I have of keeping him in that cage is to charge the bars with enough electricity to kill an ordinary man. It only stuns him.
Well, for heaven's sake.
What you see behind those bars is not a recreated human being, but a prehistoric man of gigantic strength.
I wish we had some other place to work. That thing gets on my nerves, jabbering and growling.
I can't let Vera know about this. We'll just have to stick it out, Court.
Oh, this formula of yours.
Yes?
We've been over it 1,000 times, and still the answer's the same. Oh, shut up.
Court, please. Don't do that again. If he should break loose with the outer door locked, we wouldn't have a chance.
Well, why don't we kill it?
With what?
Well, we could use a gun. Wouldn't have to go near it to kill it that way.
Vera would hear. And besides, I couldn't do a thing like that.
I'm not so sure I couldn't.
Well, we'll find a more humane way than that.
And it's getting late. Time for me to go. I told Nada I'd meet her at the dock. Nada! Nada!
Corey, I thought you'd wait on the ship.
No, it's best this way.
I was rather hurt the way you left me this evening.
I'm sorry, Nada. Well, come. Sit in the car a few moments. It's warmer in here.
All right. I'm so glad you came down. So glad I was able to see you again before I left.
Nothing could have kept me away.
This will be a long trip.
Yes. It will be.
Of course. Is there something wrong?
No.
Is there something troubling you?
No.
I just touched your hands. They're like ice.
Well, it's just chilly down here, that's all.
I was half afraid of you a moment ago. When I looked in your eyes, they seemed to be staring at me oddly.
I want to remember you in case I...
Yes?
In case I don't see you again.
Oh, we'll see each other again, Court. I'm sure of that.
So am I.
You know, I've waited ever since we got in the car for you to tell me about Mr. Browson.
Mr. Browson?
Your break with him. You made it, didn't you?
Break? Oh, yes. Yes, I told him just what I was going to do.
Oh, such a weight lifted from my mind. Now I can leave without being afraid for you.
Yes, that's right.
That's all past now. When I come back from this tour, it'll be to the young scientist I knew 6 years ago.
Remember that. Remember that.
Cord, you look so strange.
Remember the past, Nada.
Cord, what are you doing? Cord!
Nada, don't struggle, please. Just breathe deep. This poison is sure. I'll wake you soon. Oh, Nada, wherever you are, hear me. Believe me. You're the only life I have. I'll bring you back. But you must remember only the past. You must remember things as they were before. You must remember only...
Nada Arling slumps over dead. Will Court man to succeed in making her remember only the past? What will happen when he brings her back to life? And the medieval monster in Hale Browson's laboratory. What about him, eh? The hermit will tell you before the night is done.
Now the hermit again.
Court Manda has brought Nada Arling to Hale Browson's laboratory. Mr. Browson is making preparations for the final operation on Nada Arling's brain. Listen.
Have those clamps ready. Court, place your fingers here while I put these clamps. Now, not too much. Tear apart.
I'm holding it. Will those creases smooth out when I let go?
Yes, when I inject these chemicals. There. Clamps are in place. Now for the injections of this fluid. I'm ready for that now. Gently, gently. Now release your fingers slowly. Slowly. Careful. Careful.
Oh, his growling frightened me.
These clamps slipped when you moved. I'll have to put them back on again.
You cause anything more like that to happen, and I'll take the shotgun and blow your head off.
Hold your hand steady. If we expose the tissues too long, it will die again. We'll have everything to do all over again.
There, I have it down again.
Steady, steady. Now forget him. Now, just a second. We'll be ready for the solution. Creases aren't coming back. Hurry, hand me that piece of her skull that we cut away.
Here it is, in this case.
Ah, you bored all the holes in it so we could fasten it down in place?
Yes, they're ready.
Now help me again. We must replace it exactly as it was cut away.
I marked it.
Good. Ah, yes. I see the marks. Turn it just slightly. There. Hold it in place while I fasten it.
That monster grabbed his cage and the electric shock made him scream.
The lights! Court, they're dimming! Court, he's holding onto the cage and shocking the current! I can't see the work! If I stop this surgery, our work is useless. Do something quickly!
Oh, the lights have gone out now. Must have caused the fuse to blow.
We haven't any time to waste. Do something, man. That thing. Is he free?
No, he's still in his cage. He's on the floor. Electricity must have stunned him.
Look over there. There's a candle. Light it quickly.
Yes, I see it.
Quick, bring it here. We must finish this operation. My fingers are growing numb holding this tissue in place.
We can finish before that thing in the cage comes too. Can you see by this candle?
Oh, I must.
Hurry. I think I hear him stirring in his cage.
Can you see if he is?
No, there isn't enough light to see that far. Was the cage intact?
I didn't have time to look. There. I have one clamp in place on the skull. I'll have another in a moment.
What was that?
I didn't hear anything. Here, hold the candle closer.
Nada's coming too. I can see her breathing.
I must hurry. We still have to bandage her head. Oh, I can't seem to get this other clamp through the hole in the skull.
Her breath is coming faster and louder now. I can hear it.
Watch where you're holding the candle.
I can hear her breathe, Hale.
Once I get this fastened, the rest will be easy.
Oh, she's breathing so loudly, Hale, behind you!
What? The man! He's out of his cage!
He's coming toward us. He'll kill us!
Wait! We're your friends! Wait! We're going to help you! See? Come! Come, follow me!
Hale, Nada!
She's going to be all right for a moment. We must get him back to the cage. Now, that's it. Come along. Cord, he's watching you and Nada. He's motioning for you to get away from Nada.
Watch out, Hale. He's reaching for you.
Oh, he's crushing my arm. Cord, quick, there's a hypodermic needle on the table. Get it.
Yes, I have it. He's watching me now. Look. Look what I have here. This will make you feel better. Come just a little closer.
Get him with that needle. His fingers are crushing my arm.
Come on now, just a little closer. I won't hurt you.
Let go of me. Let go. Cord, get him with the hypo quickly. Quiet. He looks like he's listening to something. He's loosening his hold on me. In a moment, I might be able to pull free.
He's staring at.
Cord, look. Nader is getting up from the operating table.
No. No, she can't. The operation isn't finished.
Use the hypodermic for her, Cord. Hurry before she stands up. See? She's sitting up now.
Nada, lie down. Lie down. Oh, get back, you.
He doesn't want you to go near her.
Man.
Nada. Speaking.
Man from the past. We are going back, you and I. And we will take Cort Mander and Hale Browson with us.
Cort!
Man from the past, bring Mr. Browson here.
Cort, do something! Help me!
Cort Mander, try to move.
I can't move!
No. You want to. But I now control your will.
They can let me go. He's killing me. Cord, talk to her. I didn't bring her here. Have her make this inhuman monster. Let me go.
Hale Browson, you must die.
No, no, you can't do this to me. It's murder.
You have murdered many.
But it was different. It was the only way.
Man from the past, you must hurry. I'm not much longer for this earth.
Fingers, they're crushing my head. My head!
Man from the past, you would be dead. You're not for this world. They brought you back against your will. Cort Mander, you spoke of shooting this man. Where is the gun?
In the gun rack, on the wall there.
Get it. Bring it here. Point the gun at that poor mixed-up soul of yesterday with the body of today.
No. No.
Now, so that he may have peace and rest, pull the trigger.
No.
Pull the trigger, no. I say. I haven't much more time. Cort Mander, you and Hale Browson have been violating the eternal law. Man is born to die, and die he must. Your soul will never rest in this world, but it will never come back. There is one more shot in the gun, Cort.
Yes, Nada.
Hand the gun to me.
Yes, Nada.
I must lie down on the table here. Stand in front of me.
Yes, I am here.
This is the end of the world you created. Now we may all rest in our graves.
Hale! Cole! What has happened? Hale, go out over the door, please! Hale! What is it? What is it, Hale? Oh.
Cries go unanswered. Hale Brousen and Court Mander are dead. They will bring no more dead back to life. Now, turn on your lights. Turn them on. Pleasant dream.
Characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
That was The Search for Life from the Hermit's Cave here in the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society podcast. Once again, I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
Joshua's pick this week. Tell us why.
Well, I was looking for an episode to bring to the podcast, and I found an old Google Doc, last updated April 2017, called Moral Picks. Not morals, moral. The typo is obviously why I haven't seen this in a while, so right. It didn't come up under morals searches. But there were a number of episodes that I've already brought to the podcast, and we've discussed from so many years ago, but I found this episode on there with a description from past me to future me, which is now present me, and it said
the quantum physics of this. Is this Avengers Endgame?
Over-the-top mad scientist stuff. Good twists. Shockingly violent. Head crushed by undead caveman. Possibly the grossest sound effect in OTR. So,
Tim, tell him stuff. That pretty much just wrapped up our entire discussion.
I think there's a lot more to this because I have listened to old time radio for 4 years since then. And I listened to it again and I was shocked and amazed by what a really subversive, bat poop, crazy piece of horror radio this is.
Did you say that Doc was from 2017?
2017, yeah.
So that's 7 years ago.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, yeah. Good God.
This is a long time ago.
You're killing me.
As a buddy,
you and time are killing me.
As a buddy of mine...
Mostly you.
A buddy of mine said to me the other day, just looked over out of the blue and said, we're 12 years from 70. Why are you ruining my day? Just stop it. All right,
don't
so
do math in my face.
Right.
Come on.
So The Witch's Tale and The Hermit's Cave are so similar in that hosty, that cackle.
Oh, I love it.
Right?
It's very, like,
who stole from who?
I think we've already talked about this again 8 years ago that they're married.
Right.
And they have to record each radio show when the other is out.
Right.
I believe Witch's Tale is first.
Yeah.
It's unabashedly stealing. You're doing the same intro.
Yeah.
Other than your age and it's your birthday today joke not being in there.
Well, and the hermit has dogs.
Right.
Lots of dogs.
Yep.
And she has a cat.
Yep.
So I think it's a perfect relationship.
Yeah. That's a Brady Bunch episode I would like to see.
Worst neighbors ever.
Every time I listen to a Hermit's Cave, it starts my dogs barking. They hear those dogs barking.
So your comment from 7 years ago,
stop saying that,
is the highlight of this for me, and that is head being squished by a caveman. That sound effect, that gruesomeness.
That sentence.
That sentence. That everything about that is the best part of this.
Well, honestly,
for me, there's a serious drop off after the head being crushed moment. Like that's the best part, and then
I'm gonna school you.
Yeah, bring it.
No, I want to talk about the head crushing because, well, first of all, the first time I heard it, all I could think of was Kids in the Hall, as gross as it was.
Like, I'm crushing your head.
I'm a caveman and I'm crushing your head. but I have read a lot of old-time radio apocrypha about shows like Willis Cooper's Early Lights Out that use these gruesome sound effects, but none of them really exist anymore.
Right.
And so this is one of the first radio shows that I've heard that I got to really hear the kind of over-the-top, awful sound effects.
Right.
And I think there's a nice balance between that one. Someone's having way too much fun making that head-crushing sound effect with the very small, and I think ultimately more gruesome because it's smaller, ka-chunk of her skull.
Oh, put clock back into place. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I know it's like a coconut or something.
Right, right.
Like live, it's probably hilarious, but like that, in that moment, because again, they're speaking in hushed, concentrated tones as they're doing it, and there's
it's like a Lego piece
going, in the right. background. It's just it's so bizarre, but it's strangely tense because they play it so straight,
yeah,
and urgent, despite the ludicrousness of the scenario.
That's the thing that I like most about it is not even the visceralness of the sound effects, but the tone, the weird blend of mad science, frustrated romance, random troglodyte in the background constantly. That just the
random
just the splatter of ideas and story types and just all mashed together, and then concludes with a sort of random die roll of science fiction things that happen, and then it's done.
Yeah. There are two twists in here that I think really stand out to me. And the first one is the introduction of Court, the character who seems to be your very tropey, romantic hero who realizes he's done wrong and he wants to impress his girlfriend who he wants to marry him, and he's going to go away and do the right thing, and you think it's this total other story, and he goes back to the mad scientist and he's like, I'm going to kill my girlfriend and rewrite her brain so right. she loves me. And I'm like, what?
That was awesome.
And the scientist is like, what do you need me for? He's right. not aghast. He's like, you have two hands and a will to live, you do it.
Right.
And I was like, what am I listening to? I love that. That is absolutely not what I expected.
Theory, yes, but caveman.
Right.
But I think the second listen, for me, the biggest twist to me, especially for 1940, in all seriousness, is that they have this female character who's like, no. you know, if I married somebody, I'd probably marry you, but I'm not. I have this career, and I'm actually going to follow it. I have these ambitions, and it's going really well. And she's not portrayed as she's into money or it's shallow. It's literally personal satisfaction. She has autonomy as a human being. And so, of course, and this is the not surprising part, well, she's killed for it.
Right.
But then what is, I think, really transgressive about this for 1940 is that they bring her back to life, and she murders every male character
right.
in this entire thing. And not only that, becomes like literally from beyond the grave, the moral voice who condemns them all to hell and yep. death. It is like Mary Shelley meets Quentin Tarantino meets Andrea Dworkin. Like all in this sort of like crazy horror, weird punk rock.
A reverse Purple Man, which is a tough kind of metaphor to some people will know what I mean.
I do, but it's probably best that we leave it alone.
Purple Man.
But that's that extra layer on top of just things like the old-time radio history of gross-out horror sound effects. So that's, like, to me, why it continues to be interesting after that head crush. It's like,
yeah.
She's gonna, with her last ounce of energy, she's literally like, I have to lay down to kill you. Right. Bring me the gun.
Right. Can you explain, like, wow. Why was he so hypnotized by the end? Did I miss?
Because she has brain powers. Like, she can control his will.
But did they point it out?
Well,
really
we have this parallel, right? Like, one experiment through the guy's brain to this primitive state.
Sure.
And to me, I think the idea is they tried it again and this time gave her these advanced powers. But she also seems to be speaking from beyond, like maybe
right.
some other higher power or deity has tapped into her to be
sure.
like, no, we're not going any farther with this.
Right.
I'm going to kill you all.
I did, as I was listening, have the internal moment of like, why is this silly me. Why am I asking why is this happening? Because it's fun.
And then at the end, the knocking on the door was the doctor's wife, right? The other female voice.
I'm not sure.
What's
she
going
has
on
the
in
same
there?
Last
What's...
name. I don't know if she's a daughter or a cousin.
But that's
or
who it
wife.
Is, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because here's the weird half a second. Oh, that's not her. This is some kind of spirit or something. As Joshua just said, some kind of deity or something that's come back to revenge. The person at the door is actually her. Come back to life. Do you know what I mean? Like, is that another twist?
That would be a little too much, I think.
Fine.
That's a little excessive.
Let's have a sense of decorum there.
Right? Don't be ridiculous. That's not how bringing back people from the dead works.
Again, from the very top, you think, okay, mad scientist. I know the mad scientist deal, and it's pretty reasonable. Like, I'm hoping this will help, you know, extend people's lives. Oh, he's not working out so well. I'll play with some things and try it. Like, he's not a malicious presence, really.
No. My favorite line in that first scene is he has that moment. He goes, here, let me seat you. And then he clearly pulls out the chair and sits Vera down like a gentleman. Like, I'm a monster, but here, let me pull out your chair for you. But you're right, but he's not. He has his justifications. And honestly, Vera, in that first scene, even though maybe some listeners might be sympathetic to it, she makes a terrible argument. It's the appeal to destiny fallacy. It's just like, because we've always died, it must mean that we should always die.
Yes.
And that's part of what interests me about this, is that it's stealthy. It has this really parochial, small-c conservative message that is the traditional Mary Shelley Frankenstein message about, like, we should not tamper with the forces of nature. But within it, kind of embedded and hidden in it, is this really disruptive.
Yeah.
If you stop this woman from getting her career, she's going to come back. She's going to murder you all, and we're going to do it in really rich, detailed sound effects. And so it's really that tension between those two messages is what makes it really fascinating, at least from a contemporary point of view. It might have been even more jaw-dropping in 1940, or probably it was just a little kid staying up late listening to it.
Squish!
They never thought some sad 50-year-old man would be super excited about it 80 years later.
Wow.
Perfect awkward
wow.
pause there.
Again, you're killing me. You and time are killing me. And my choices in life.
There was also this nice mirroring of the literal immortality being created by these mad scientists. I thought it was fun to give Nada the profession of a movie star, where you got that way to figuratively achieve immortality through fame and fortune. So I just think underneath this bat poop crazy episode, there's a lot of stuff in here. Eric's just like, I have tuned out.
No, not at all. What you've done is changed my opinion. I've listened to this wrong. I'm
well,
enjoying
it. I hate it.
I'm enjoying it more and more and more listening to your enjoyment of this. My vote's going to change at the end of this.
Tim brought it up, but I think it's worth digging more into like the arguments presented pro and con for extending life and returning people from the dead. Because unlike a lot of these Frankenstein It's never worked out, but like I feel like it presents in a simplistic manner, of course. Two sides of the argument.
Right.
You have Hale, who seems to just doing it for the benefit of humanity.
if you don't have to die and you don't want to die,
yeah,
let me help you not die.
Court improves upon Vera's argument by doing a more of like a cost-benefit analysis where he's saying, he says explicitly that at first he thought the good outweighed the potential for evil in all this.
Mm-hmm.
And then he realizes, oh, actually, it hasn't. Now we're actually bringing people back from the dead.
Right.
He wants to get removed from this situation instead of just having the moral courage to go tell Hale he's wrong, and he no longer feels comfortable extending these people's lives beyond where there's any quality of life.
Yeah, yeah.
He wants her to give him an out so he doesn't have to do it. Like, marry me. Then he can go to the mad scientist and say, like, well, I'm sorry. See you. Have fun experimenting with dead people. I'm going to get married. Bye. So it almost has that role reversal, right? He wants marriage to save him from the world, which is usually in this antiquated old-time radio time, what women are looking for, is to take me away from all this and keep me somewhere. I'm still, like, amazed at how much possibly unintentional depth there is in this.
I agree with everything you say, and yet I primarily enjoy it for its madcap qualities.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and the scene where he poisons her with some sort of poison chloroform.
Yes, in the car.
Remember the past. Right. Remember the past.
Again, poison works really quick.
Yep. Well, at least in this one, he's designed it to work quick.
Right.
Because he does ostensibly love her.
Right.
This is a weird thing to say, but it really captures the awkwardness of trying to kill a partner. Like, you think you know how this is going to go, and then it's a conversation that's like, I can't transition into. So, how about you breathe in deeply?
Right.
Honey, can you just make this easier on me?
Right. No. Well, are we ready to vote?
No.
You got more?
There's a lot in here, but not that much. It is still the Hermit's Cave. Let's vote.
You changed my mind. I would have said it was fine. At the end of this, I actually, having re-listened to it now through your voices, I think this is a lot better than I gave it credit for in the sense of fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's fun, fast-moving, crazy, chaotic, and I'm going to up this to stands the test of time and was very good and possibly, I can't think of any of the Hermit's Caves I like better than this, so... Best of that for sure.
Yeah. As you've been saying, it has significant things to say. It does that ably, but I primarily admire it for subverting expectations and like wrangling its chaos, without reducing the impact of the chaos. Mm-hmm. It focuses it well.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that. I want to take one quick side trip to say that that final scene. In the operating room, I mentioned earlier where they're speaking in hushed tones and they're trying to get her skull back on. And this
the lights go out.
Yeah, lights go out. That is a great scene. And suddenly they're doing this operation by candlelight. And it legitimately is, again, as ridiculous. It's more admirable because the scenario is so ridiculous that they still manage to have you buy into the suspense. And particularly is that moment where Court says, like, oh, I can hear her breathing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it takes me a moment because it starts really soft. And I actually thought they were directing me toward Nada. And then obviously you as the listener realize before he does that, oh no, that's the caveman. He got out.
Yes.
And that's a great bit of suspense amidst all this chaos.
There's a great line in that I forgot to bring up too, in that it's completely dark and they can't see anything. And he says, get the candle. It's over there. And he says, yes, I see it.
Might have been a first draft.
Yeah. Found the light source without a light source. Good for him. Your vote?
Oh, my vote. I think that what I would say is I'm going to steal a vote that Tim made a couple months ago when we were trying to decide which we liked better between Coffin in Studio B and the later Quiet Please iteration. And you liked the Coffin in Studio B just because it was earlier and it was doing more with less. And I think you called it like a punk rock classic.
Yeah, yes.
And I definitely think if anything else fits a punk rock classic, it's this. This is just
raw,
pulpy, raw.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also just being willing to break a lot of rules. So Punk rock classic is my vote.
Nice.
If Bishop had written it, that caveman would have been flying a plane.
Or singing. There actually is a dark fantasy with a Neanderthal, so yeah, maybe we'll do that one.
Tim, tell him stuff.
Please go visit ghoulishdelights.com. It's the home of this podcast. I mean, you can find this podcast wherever you find podcasts. We're all over the place. But at ghoulishdelights.com, you can vote in polls to let us know what you think. You can leave comments. You can share your opinions with us directly. You can also link to our store and buy some swag, t-shirt, backpack, hats. There's all kinds of good stuff. Check out our store. And you can find a link to our Patreon page.
Yes, go to patreon.com/themorals and support this podcast. Become a member of the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society. We really appreciate it if you give us money, and we appreciate those who already do. We have great bonus episodes for you. We have Zoom happy hours. We have book clubs. We have so much to offer. You know, it just dawned on me. We did this again. We're talking about time. That's a theme of this episode.
It's killing me.
Yeah. Many, many years ago when we first started Patreon, we did some ringtones from radio shows.
You did.
And I'm thinking the head crushing would make a fabulous ringtone that we will make available to patrons. And I say that as if
you know
it's
how to
really
do it.
Hard to just cut out a sound effect from a file online and put it on your phone. Anyone can do it, but we'll do that work for you if you become a patron.
Invest the 3 to 4 minutes necessary.
Yes.
The Mysterious Old Radio Listening. Is it really that easy? Because someone teach me, because I have all these ringtones I want. I don't know how to do it.
If you become a member of the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society.
I'll give you $1 a month.
All right.
Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society theater company also does recreations of classic old-time radio shows and a lot of our own original work live on stage. You can find out where we're performing, what we're performing, and how to get tickets by going to ghoulishdelights.com. And make it a great night out. Bring some people, have a great meal, watch us do some old-time radio, and we'd love to see you. If you can't go for whatever reason, as a Patreon, we do post the video and or audio of our live performances. Another perk for being a Patreon. What is coming up next?
Coming up next is a live recording of a podcast we performed in front of a live audience. And speaking of good
they were brought
Scott
back
Bishop,
from the dead.
It is an episode of Dark Fantasy presented in front of people who paid to be there. Boy, they paid. And the episode is The Edge of the Shadow. Until then.
Look out!
I'm crushing your head!
I'm crushing your head!
I'm crushing your head!